again there, folks. So I recently came across report by the National Preparedness Commission. I was watching a farming video, and there was a fella on there began to talk about this. And what this report, which came out in the middle of February, and what it's really about is, well, it asks a question: how prepared is the UK for disruptions to the supply chains, and the ability to distribute food? And we kind of get away from the fact that the background to this is growing geopolitical tensions and instability around the world. And I just thought it would be interesting to take a look at some of the. It's a big report, and I won't go through it all, but I do think this will be a longer video than usual. But I just thought it would be interesting to sort of browse it and have a look at a few things which I've got noted down, because I do think it's quite interesting, because it touches on something which the vast majority of the population, they just take it for granted. They just take it for granted that there's going to be food in the shops. And now there's some people out there having a look at how this is all put together, and the dangers of not being there. So it's called Just in Case: 7 Steps to Narrow the UK Civil Food Resilience Gap. And he has who made it. And here you can see the introduction. How UK society copes with food crises. Since World War II, the UK has experienced what to previous generations would have been a revolution in food. Diets, supply, and tastes have changed and become more used to more plentiful, diverse, and aseasonal food. Where the British buy from and what is purchased has changed, so have tastes and expectations. At the same time, access to food has become more dependent on fewer, larger suppliers, while still being subject to the vagaries of unequal incomes and living standards. This report considers what would be entailed for the public if the status quo were disrupted. What would public reactions be? How prepared for food shocks are the British? Specifically, it sets out a challenge: the necessity to take food shocks more seriously and how to improve civil food resilience. I mean, so it's just interesting that this has been commissioned, and this like deep within the think tanks and these commissions, they're worried about this, which tells you a lot. Now, look, I'm not going to say, yeah, everybody has to run out and stock up on tins of beans and pasta or whatever, but these are papers being floated around within the British government, and it says it right in the title that they don't think it's up to scratch. And to me, this isn't a scare story, actually. They're telling the government how this has to be addressed. Whether the government take them up on that is something else, but we'll come into that. So it just says, box one, civil food resilience. By civil food resilience, we mean the capacity of people in their daily lives to be more aware of risks to food, more skilled in reducing unnecessary risks, and more prepared to act with others to ensure all society is well fed in and after crises. I mean, what crises? You see, now it isn't specific. Now, as I record this, it's all about Ukraine, it's all about war, in fact. And if I'm honest, I think that is what they're talking about here, rather than climate change or another pandemic or this kind of thing, or just civil breakdown, which is a risk, according to them as well. This cannot be left to the people to activate in an ad hoc way or on their own. It requires a process of learning, capacity building, and preparation to be, as government wishes, a response of the whole society requires infrastructure, guidance, and support. The report finds that these are currently lacking, but could and should be introduced. This executive summary provides an overview of the key narratives and findings from a larger, more detailed report. That report concludes that what little attention to food resilience there has been focuses on food supply rather than the consumer and public end of the food system. Insofar as the public's role in resilience is considered, this is left vague, generalized, and thus insufficiently specific. The public dimension to resilience is thus more likely to become itself a risk in crises. The UK is being slow to address this civil dimension, as the main report shows other countries offer different and better directions for civil society and the public than the UK presently does. The UK could do better. So what they're saying there is that there's risks which the public are not just not aware of, but they also don't have any framework or any understanding of how to deal with the risk or even that the risk exists. They just expect that there's going to be food in the supermarkets when they turn up there. And yeah, that's actually not guaranteed. Or is it? And so this is what this report's kind of getting to. The UK does have an official government resilience framework, the latest iteration of an evolving policy published in 2022. This too has next to no focus on either food or the role of the public in civil food resilience. The 2023 National Risk Register only conceives of one direct food impact, that of food supply contamination. So the government risk assessments, they aren't even considering that the supply chains or that basically that there could be no more food in the supermarket if this or that crisis were to hit the country. And it says the omission or downplaying of risks does not match what specialists or the food industries think possible. There appears to be a serious gap in state thinking. So, I mean, one of the most amazing things here, because I am going to go off on tangents, because this sums up a lot that, the British government sticks its nose into your business all of the time. It tells you what to think, and it tells you what they've got nudge departments in all of this. They police your language and everything. But when it comes to what you actually expect the state to do, which is secure basic necessities to live, like food, they seem kind of aloof, and they seem kind of indifferent. They go on here and they say the manner and impact of this intervention leaves much to be desired. It failed to do most of what the present report proposes, the need to explain, to engage with the public, and to be context specific. But it did represent a shift into the public sphere, although the advice was thin, falling into the trap of putting the onus on consumers to be prepared without giving support or requisite infrastructure. It assumed all consumers are equally able to follow the advice when they are not. It provided no infrastructure. It made little to or no connection with the dynamics of the food system, which make the public foods insecure. Crucially, too, it appeared to ignore the recognition that even people in business, as well as analysts and scientists, now give to the fragilities built on the food system. If the UK wants to develop civil food resilience, there are strong arguments for doing so. Giving advice out of the blue is not the way to go about it. Making the UK public more food prepared requires thought. A more considered, evidence-based strategy for civil food resilience is not only possible, but desirable and long overdue. So we can move on a little bit, and they say the purpose of this report is to assess the state of food resilience in the UK with an emphasis on societal or civilian resilience. Is the population prepared? And their conclusion to that is no. What could make it so? Institutional architecture, what existing policies are involved, what gaps exist? Yeah, it's a big thing. So I'm going to have a just scroll forward a little bit. If the UK is to create a coherent and integrated position on food resilience, it must recognise that the current resilience thinking has to jostle for influence amid different discourses about food security that need to be aligned. One is a top-down approach that sees food security as a matter of trade and supply only. And so basically, the government, again, like in terms of the farms, in terms of the tax, in terms of everything about this country, everywhere the government shouldn't be, they are. But where they should be, which is guaranteeing or coming up with a framework for to make us food resilient, they're not there. They're leaving it to the market. They're leaving it, and which is to say, the supermarkets and the supply chains, they've opted out of this, unless they come in to regulate them for net zero or something. But by and large, what they're saying here, again, like one is a top-down approach that sees food security as a matter of trade and supply only, purely market-driven. But if in the crisis, what do we do? And here they say, this is seemingly blind to the experience of millions of people already finding household food security a real problem. This is before any crisis has even hit. Food prices are 25% higher than a few years ago. We cannot assume that providing a sufficient supply from anywhere is maintained, consumption will also be fine. In this paradigm, food resilience is simply a matter of ensuring supply, assuming demand is constant. In fact, people's reactions in food crises cannot be assumed, and here it comes, nor can social cohesion be. It has to be built. And if you look, simmering under the surface here, this is why I think it's interesting, because there's a number of things they can't doubt. They're not going to come out and straight away and say, well, look, we're going to be at war with Russia, or NATO's breaking up, or all of this. We need to have, or just we need to have spend so much on military. Under all of that as well, it's just actual makeup of the country. It says, meanwhile, and the social cohesion should kind of give the game away. There isn't any, is there? It's been destroyed. Meanwhile, confidence that even a rich country such as the UK can maintain supply in all circumstances is weakening. There is increasing awareness of the deepening fissures within the food system. The polycrisis of food being an intersection point for economics, health, environment, geopolitics, and social divisions ruptures confidence that all is well. It is more than likely that the demand on civil food resilience would take different forms in different circumstances. There is little dialogue between these parallel discourses. There should be. The report therefore points to the need for a significant realignment of policies, institutions and strategies, all designed to take the confluence and volatility of food security and resilience more seriously. In World War I's and World War II's, the British public had to be brought into active engagement because supply became stretched and could not be taken for granted. Normal modes of food provision were disrupted and brought under non-market control. Britain produced only about a third of its food, and large sections of its population were poorly fed. With the threat of a food blockade, emergency measures were taken. Rationing, public advice, injection of new skills, new feeding outlets, a war on waste, and a massive effort to produce more food based on addressing health and equity ensued, changing the food culture for a generation. You'll remember, of course, they had the dig for victory. And this is actually where they're going to go with this. They're touching on World War II because they're expecting that we'll have to do it again. So the football pitches get turned into potato crops and this kind of thing. You know, they're filling the roundabouts full of cabbages. But the problem is that that requires you to have a degree of social cohesion that existed in Britain in World War II. And this is not there. Here it says the post-World War II model of food and society is fraying. Post-World War II, UK food security was rebuilt by reinvesting in home agriculture by then Europeanisation and the Common Agricultural Policy. 70 years later, the model that said produce more food and food security will follow is under strain from environmental and climate challenges, new diet-related diseases, and changed geopolitics. The environmental and climate challenges here seems to be where, again, everything's coming under this kind of technocratic control. And land isn't being taken away from just producing food. Yet nearly a third of its food still comes from Europe, and global supplies have other demands too. So, I mean, here you come to a really basic problem that we're importing too much food. Not as much as what I thought, actually. The challenge of UK civil food resilience now inhabits a new terrain compared to even a few years ago, let alone longer, all just when conventional market forces are looking stretched by price rises, oil and resource dependency, and a locked-in consumer culture, and when business is aware of fragilities and structures it has built up. See them in the main report. This alone would make for tricky food resilience politics. In taking stock of where we are, the report distinguishes between chronic slow food shocks to society that are being normalized, such as obesity and deep inequalities on the one hand, and acute shocks that are now coming to the fore, exemplified in recent events such as the impact of Russia's invasion of food export in Ukraine, the economic disruption of COVID-19, the unexpected trade route disruptions such as the Black Sea. And it goes on there. The interplay of chronic, I mean, they're stacking up quite a bit, these problems. The interplay of the chronic and acute difficulties makes the current lack of policy attention to civil food resilience all the more remarkable. I'm going to skip forward to something here, tapping into public engagement, food system dynamics. And here's the, I mean, threat events. And conditions that could affect civil food resilience. I mean, there it is, military weaponization, threat condition, extreme aggression, such as blockades, which is an island we're vulnerable to, attacks on which potential effect on consumers, reduced food capacity, public morale hit, looting. So here it comes. Attacks on software and satellites, which have the effect of online ordering reduced or unavailable, food logistics compromised, electricity disabled, energy outage, normal distribution information and web dependency collapse. And I mean, it goes on. Economic food price rise, pressures on more households, worse diet-related ill health, on squeezed incomes, wider society, social discontent and inequalities. Normal breakdown in food logistics, which I think is probably the most likely. Reduced food supply, competition for supplies, desperation to find alternative ingredients. What I mean, what all of this amounts to, in my view, is the problem with complexity. The more complex a society becomes, the more vulnerable it becomes. If you're growing turnips in an allotment half a mile down the road, like, I don't care what people say, that's pretty rock solid. If you're relying on Elon Musk's Starlink navigation internet system to guide a self-driving truck from Dover to Newcastle, carrying stuff with carrying like refrigerated produce, yeah, there's a lot that can go wrong there. There's a lot that can go wrong, and that's actually where kind of the direction where they're going to go in with this whole thing. This is an interesting section here because this is, remember, what can go wrong. Political lack of public trust in authority, low trust in politicians. They do address this somewhere. Public mistrusts official messages or advice. So here's the problem. If you think all of your politicians are scumbag, when what they call the food shock hits, you won't even believe what you're being told. And there's a chronic lack of trust in politicians at the moment. And so the public will mistrust the official messages or advice. Sporadic shortages induce consumer cynicism in black markets. Weaken social cohesion. Now, I think we've already got that, even with no crises, no food shocks, nothing, because of just the nature of the way society has been constructed. It means you've got in groups and you've got out groups, and the out groups are going to network with each other. This is why you could not have the dig for victory thing. This is why, if you had a community in certain parts of the country, of multicultural Britain, and then you had a communal garden, which is something that they mention here quite a bit. And then you've got a multi-ethnic, it seems to me that what it's just going to fracture, and there's going to be all kinds of allegations and incriminations about who was getting the best of it. Whereas if you go to World War II, wasn't the case. It's because diversity is not a strength, folks. Surprise, surprise. Response to crisis is slow or judged to be poor. Public anger and so on. We've got pandemics, we've got environmental. We've got social and the typology of food vulnerability. Intensity, chronic, long developed, e.g., a population that has been unhealthy for a long time, acute, severe, and sudden shock, rapid spread of a disease or major power. And I'm going to move on to policy reset, I think it is, that I wanted to have a look at as well. Step one, I'm looking for step two. Assess the public's mood, perceptions, and engagement. Remember, in our country, we've got the nudge units, we've got applied psychology divisions, and all of the rest of it. So, here, this is fascinating. The report summarizes the state of public knowledge and identifies a number of polls and trackers that seek to assess both knowledge and confidence. A more detailed, comprehensive, and composite civil food resilience tracker is needed. The government was expected to publish one in 2024, so it doesn't seem to have happened. Those that are extant paint a picture of low public trust in authority. Only 35% of the UK population say they trust the national government. This is lower than the OECD average of 41%. Trust in food per se, rather than its systemic resilience, is higher according to the Food Standards Agency. However, if the public is in relative ignorance of coming shocks or how these might affect their circumstances, such trust must be taken as conditional. Lloyd's Register Foundation research, World Risk Pool, indicates that countries that have experienced some kind of shocks to society have greatest fear of the possibility of food shocks. Experience teaches them that shocks can break expectations of normality and underline how during shocks, food is essential. It is a long time since the UK had such an experience, implied that we better get ready. There is a danger that the UK policymakers are relying on little more than assumptions that food will simply flow. In fact, the research reveals a situation that amounts to asymmetric rationing. Confidence in availability of food is income related. Large numbers of the British population are technically food insecure, according to the government's own measure. UK food skills, being able to assemble meals from whatever is available or in difficult circumstances, are patchy and not primed for shock. Much modern consumption is technology dependent, mobile phones, kitchens, energy, water, and income related. People on low incomes already cut back and have little to no financial capacity to store food in reserve. The public deserves to be alerted sensibly and coherently to possible risks affecting food supply and availability. The report lists example of where business-orientated bodies provide this kind of alert for commerce. The question then is, why is this not done for and with the public? So once again, we come to the problem of the British government is sticking its nose into every area of life, except the most basic, which is to make sure the population can be fed in shock circumstances. They're nowhere to be seen, according to this report. Why is this? It's a repeating thing again and again and again. When you need the government, or they're leaving it to the market, they're leaving it to the farms. They're leaving it that everything will just be coordinated without their input or with their say so. There is a danger that UK policy makers are relying on little more than assumptions that food will simply flow. In fact, the research reveals a situation that amounts to asymmetric rationing. I mean, it's just the idea that we're going to be trying to impose a few different things here. They want to have, I mean, they do mention it elsewhere, the community garden thing. They want to have a localized system, which is relying on the public mood. It relies on having the society that we had in the Second World War, which we don't have. And it's quite possible that this is why the government hasn't actually, the government will know that. The government will know what it's dealing with. And so the way the government's looking at it is saying, well, if we get these food shocks, the supermarkets and the supply chains will just have to take care of it. Because if they started to try and reorganize society and implement policies to make people more resilient, which is localized, then they're going to have to confront the society that they've actually made, and that it cannot actually, it isn't cohesive. It doesn't function properly like a normal society does anymore. But here we come to it. Local authorities are key to building civil food resilience. There is extensive international and UK experience of how subnational civil society acts in pursuit of food resilience. What can begin as a desire to act on climate change often quickly broadens. The 2015 Milan Urban Food Policy Pact, signed by 100 cities, heralded a city-region focus on food policy and is now a network of over 280 cities around the world. There's a quite ominous thing there. That sounds like they're talking about 15-minute cities. Because they, of course, in these massive urban centres, they are going to be the most acutely affected by food shortages. These identify food as a key feature of climate action, social cohesion, work and regeneration. They are increasingly aware of the resilience agenda. Evidence suggests reducing this impact would benefit health and ecosystems, thereby improving sustainability, which in turn enhances resilience readiness. The UK has a vibrant city and town-based movement around food, partly energized in recent years by and in reaction to a lack of central government policy. This has spawned networks of interested authorities and civil society organizations with active food frameworks. This is, see, it's actually reading it now through again. It's a bit more technocratic than what I originally thought. Various UK cities are presented in the main report as case studies of food policy councils to illustrate how a new form of sub-national food resilience governance is emerging. Three are considered in some depth: London, Birmingham, Bristol. The role of England's 10 metro mayors is now significant in supporting this city regional food focus despite severe financial cuts. Yorkshire is taking this one step further with three mayors. Okay. Oh, yeah, so they've got problems with the urban centres. And here we are again, create rural, local food resilience committees to coordinate resilience preparation. So my view on this, regardless of the 15-minute city sort of shill there, is that it seems to be that the government is too hands off when it comes to, firstly, actually even acknowledging that we could get these food shocks. And then there's also the problem that you have to deal with the mood of the nation. You have to deal with the fact that people aren't prepared for it. And they've kind of absolved themselves of getting involved. They don't want to know it. They because I think the society isn't fit for purpose, to be quite honest. I don't think they can do that. So they were going to wash their hands of it. But there's another issue here, which is that in the localized councils or decentralized networks, Britain's, as this report says, is our food supply is extraordinarily centralized, according to them. Almost everything just comes from a supermarket. So if the supermarkets shut down, supply chains are wrecked, for one whatever reason, Whether, I mean, it doesn't have to be war, it doesn't have to be, it could be just the internet infrastructure, breaks down or something like that. That then that this is itself just already a food shock, and you've got almost no time, particularly in these fancy new 15-minute city type things, to prepare. The public isn't prepared. In the more modern cities, what seems to be suggested here is that they are actually moving to make them more localized, but it's kind of dishonest because that will be still that I don't think that food's going to be locally generated. I just think that it'll be more sort of WEF, internet based sort of drones arriving and apps and all the rest of it. But just to take a step back from all of this, the here you have these reports being quietly submitted to the government, which people don't think about. Not only are people not thinking about how fragile the food sort of supply chains are, but on top of that, they're not even thinking about the fact that these reports are being handed into the government at this particular moment. And I would say, this all points to a certain direction. So I would take the advice of this and try to set up localized. It's something to think about. It's something to think. How much food do you have if it was to go down? But what this says to me is that these complex systems that we've built are not, well, the word here is resilience. They're not resilient. They're not. And I've been saying it for years. Plan accordingly, folks. Take care out there.